So I'm going to continue on with some of the ideas that Jim was just presenting, although I have to confess that what we're doing is fairly immature compared to some of the presentations that we've seen over the last couple of days. In particular, watching Hugh work this morning, we're about 6 months into it, and I think he's about a decade into it, so we've got a lot of catch-up to do. On the other hand, we haven't talked at all in the last couple of days much about suppression and failure and transmission ideas, and so what this is going to look at is actually how we can do this, but in a fully model-based fashion. So before we begin, these are the apologies, if you will. I'm a stochastic modeler. I like to look at complex systems, and I like to build models that are multi-level for complex systems, and I work primarily with ecologists, environmental exposure, climatology, things of that sort. And so what I'm primarily concerned with is building hierarchical models, as I said, and fitting them in the Bayesian inference paradigm. I think in a sense, that's about the only sensible way to look at these sorts of models. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing either with uncomfortable approximation or possibly inappropriate asymptotics. As I mentioned just at the outset, I'm a neophyte with regard to sensor networks, but there's a lot of learning, and I'm here, and I've learned quite a bit in 2 days already, and I think one thing that's revealed is how lovely some of the statistical issues are, and lots of nice things to bring back to the statistical community, which doesn't seem to have participated all that much in this. I know Mark Hansen is an example of a statistician who's doing a lot these days and has invested perhaps 3 years of exploring these sorts of problems. But I would say generally the number of people is small who are looking at these things. And the last thing is we're interested in sort of full posterior inference, so there's no optimization anywhere in this talk. I don't know if this is an outline as much as it is a bunch of points. And so again, just to clarify where we fit in, I want to talk a lot about modeling and computational issues, local collection, suppression and transmission, failure, redundancy, some of the things that have been mentioned, just more specifically for our situation. Again, as I said, we're going to focus on probabilistic modeling rather than on algorithmic approaches. Fully model-based approach, which implies full and exact inference and uncertainty captured as well. Our computational challenges are more in the model fitting side. We're not dealing with the kind of computational challenges that have been described in a lot of the other examples. There is some interest in measuring information loss, and we're going to use Kullback-Leibler sorts of distances as well. I'm going to show you some simple experimental examples, and then finally comment on where we'd really like to get to. Jim has alluded to some of these things as well. So the data collection is at the node level. In fact, in our field experiments, we have, say, 2 sensors at each node. We're also going to add to that data collection some field data that we're going to collect on a sporadic basis to help determine whether our nodes are staying calibrated. In other words, the issue there is that some deer might run across the field and knock out your soil moisture sensor, and your data is not worth very much at that point, but you're not necessarily going to know it unless you go back out there and do some field collection to see what's going on. We're viewing collection at high temporal resolution. For example, we're measuring soil moisture at 30-minute intervals. That's actually overkill, as Jim was pointing out, in many situations. But in other situations, that fine temporal scale is going to be really important to understand the process that we're really trying to appreciate. So again, we're kind of viewing the cost of collection as cheap. The transmission is expensive in terms of battery life. I know people have earlier said things perhaps that don't reflect exactly this view here, but it is sort of the view that we're operating under, and it seems at least relevant for the sensors that we're playing with. And there is a possibility of multivariate collection at the sites, not just, for example, soil moisture, but light availability, sap flow, things of that sort. And so, again, they will add to the complexity of what we're working with. So, very simple versions, focus on a wheel, single hop, communication only fashion. This is my only high-tech graphic. You'll be impressed, especially compared to all the other talks. In our simple version, no node-to-node communication. Again, all of this is for the future, but in terms of full, as I said, full stochastic modeling, this is where we're starting. As a matter of fact, it's building up in again, ways that are probably too primitive for most of you, but they seem to be the way that we needed to start. Single node, suppression only, failure only, and then bringing both in. Two nodes, and one, two, and then N, of course. The network of nodes is where the fun really is, because then we can bring in spatial modeling, and we can bring in failure models that reflect spatial aspects, et cetera. And so we can also then start to bring in communication between the nodes and in that fashion. And so, you know, again, this sounds really obvious, but in terms of doing the detailed sort of modeling you're trying to do, it's it happens, it seems to happen slowly, or at least maybe we're slow. Because of the description of the network we're looking at, temporal suppression is the only possibility here. As Jim alluded to, there are periods when there's very little to be gained by transmission. The process is not changing very much locally, and as a result, at the resolution we're looking at, and so there doesn't seem to be the need to transmit that much, although we do have to make those decisions. Again, repeating that the transmission is viewed as expensive relative to collection. We're only going to transmit when there's a consequential change. So that leads to the idea of suppression schemes. And as Jim pointed out, there are various ways to envision them. You guys all probably know much more about suppression than I do. But certainly you compare with possibly the previous observation, with a previously transmitted observation, or possibly with a model-based observation that's been predicted at that time and location. And so those are decisions you have to make in terms of whether you're going to get information possibly back from the gateway that would allow you to predict at that location to make a transmission decision, or whether you'll just compare with the previously transmitted observation. There are potentially problems with that as well. If you're interested in, for example, transmitting light information, you may want to actually compare with 24 hours ago the light availability rather than, for example, the previously transmitted light, which may not reflect, again, the hourly, the daily cycles in light availability. So as a result, we're kind of looking at suppression in this fashion, or suppression in this fashion, either comparing to the previous transmission or, as I said, to some estimated value. How much suppression? We'll play with different choices, but we're anticipating what we would view in the statistical world as a very high rate of suppression. We're anticipating, therefore, something on the order of perhaps 80 to 90% missing data. Statisticians cringe at that. It might not bother you guys so much, but we get uncomfortable when you start losing 20% of data. And so these sorts of rates of missingness are, you know, really make us feel queasy.
Is it really missing? I mean, you kind of, if you don't get that data at that kind of point, you know something about it. It's more like it's sort of
censored data. I think censored is the right word. But in any event, when we talk about censored survival data and censored interval censored data of one sort or another, it sometimes just clustered in the title of missing.
Right.
But you're right. Technically, it's not that we don't know anything about it. Although, depending on the model, we might actually not know anything about it. I'll get to that in just a minute. Again, as I said, there's no cross-node communication, so there's no possibility for spatial suppression at the moment. Transmission failure, again, this is more of a, in some sense, it's a perhaps a hardware issue in terms of what's actually being received. And again, I'm sure this audience knows much more about this than I do. In our context, though, transmission failure will vary spatially and vary seasonally. And the reasons for that are because foliage affects whether we have failure in transmission, and that varies seasonally. And the physical location of the sensor will again depend upon will affect its transmission failure. So we'll need models for that. What we're really concerned about is sort of this issue, disentangling failure from suppression. In other words, the fact that something wasn't received at the gateway, we have to know whether it was a transmission failure or whether there was no transmission at all. So we'll get to that in a bit. But there's obviously a lot of literature on that sort of stuff, and that's what you guys can talk about in terms of redundancy, error-correcting schemes, lead to issues about when we transmit, should we transmit both the value and the time that the transmission, should we do it just for the most recent one, should we do it for several previous transmissions, how many of them. You know, again, it starts to get expensive if we're going to do a lot of this transmission. Another possibility is to include acknowledgement from the gateway. In other words, if there's no acknowledgement, then perhaps we retransmit. So again, all these schemes sound completely obvious, but we're trying to look at them in terms of their stochastic implications. Of course, it's evident that a suppression or observation after a failure has resulted in comparison with that failed value. You're no longer back at the earlier stage. Yeah.
Could you just comment in statistics? There's been a lot of work on sensor data.
Yeah.
So could you comment on what are the complications that?
That's what's coming. It's literally the next couple of slides. So it's a good question. It's just I'm sort of speaking broadly, and I'll be more precise in just a few minutes. Okay, so the process that we're actually envisioning overall is what you call spatially dependent time series. So basically, at every single physical location in the region, there is a time series that's going forward, and those time series are all correlated, and that's what we're spatially correlated, if you will. And so that's the overall sort of data model that we're thinking about. But that's the sort of the latent model. That's if we knew the truth. And the observed data is kind of a noisy version of this. So there's kind of, an observation level that sits above a dynamic model, if you will. And so that's perhaps the right way to really think about what we're doing. And as a matter of fact, that leads to this kind of familiar multi-level specification where we have data given process and perhaps some parameters in this first stage, and then the process model given parameters associated with the process in the second stage, and finally some priors on the parameters. Again, as I said, dynamics in the second stage. And this is like the pictures again that Jim was just showing you. The dynamics themselves can be characterized in lots of different ways. Most familiar probably is with local autoregressive models. They can be actually through fully spatiotemporal models with discretization. They can be driven by local differential equations. So a moisture modeling, for example, is typically driven by differential equation specifications. And the way they're connected up in space is by spatially colored noise at the second stage, and possibly more generally, spatially spatially located coefficients or parameters in the time series or differential equations models that are actually spatially associated. So we kind of have like spatially varying coefficients, if you will, or spatially varying parameters. Okay? That of course leads to all sorts of questions about parameters that are being viewed as global for the whole region, local parameters. What parameters then do we want to think about as being sort of spatially heterogeneous versus homogeneous? Similarly, there are temporally evolving parameters reflecting seasonality. I mentioned that earlier, and so we have issues in terms of actually modeling the nature of these parameters. We can be interested in these process parameters themselves. And I would say also, typically there'd be some interest in reconstruction of the local time series. And reconstruction for us is prediction, if you will, or It could be a temporal or spatial interpolation under the model. So we're not interested necessarily in sort of simple piecewise interpolation schemes, which certainly could be implemented. But again, it's not about the spirit of what we're doing. It's really full inference in terms of posterity distributions. We're also, as Jim pointed out, thinking about the global model fitting as an offline activity. And that's also raised the question of at what temporal scale. The soil moisture may come in at every half hourly time intervals. We may fit the global model daily or weekly or something like that. Again, depends on how much we want to accumulate. Moreover, the global model, again, may be reflecting parameters that are temporally evolving. So as a result, there are issues in terms of how to build these sorts of things and how to use the current information as prior, if you will, for the new model fitting, et cetera. Again, I think all these ideas are fairly straightforward, but this just reiterates some of the things I've just been saying. Particularly, as Jim again pointed out, we tend to use Gibbs sampling in some fashion or other to do the model fitting. In the example I'm going to show you, there is currently no local modeling, as I just mentioned, just comparison with the previous transmission. Okay? So here's an example of the model I'm actually going to use. Just a basic AR1 model with some drift. And the again, this just sort of centers the model with, again, the usual regressive coefficient and, as I said, some sort of spatially colored Gaussian error process. So that's the kind of model that we're thinking about, collected into vector form at a set of nodes or sensors. The most convenient way to work with the associated likelihood is just to peel it off sequentially over time. You can do that because of the nice AR1 structure. It's quite easy in single site case. Even in a two site case, we only have to specify one correlation value. But as we get to a full spatial process, then we're going to have to actually specify a valid, say, Gaussian process model, including a valid covariance function. So again, that's just the way this will be extended and built. I wanted to say a bit about what actually happens. If we have a string of suppressions, then what we're looking at is, for example, we actually say transmitted at T0, transmitted again at T0 plus K plus 1, and had a string of K observations that were suppressed. The information, to come back to what Rob was just mentioning, is the information is therefore, because of the suppression, we have this information about y and t. It was constrained to an interval of this sort. And so we're kind of thinking about doing, therefore, is we'll bring these unobserved variables in as latent variables in the likelihood, but they come with constraints. They come with these restrictions on them. And that's what we're going to actually try to work with in terms of fitting the model. So in terms of fitting a Gibbs sampler, the way we do it most easily is we're going to update all of the unknowns in the model, pretending we have all of the data missing and observed. Then we update all the missing values, given the parameters and the observed y's, and we iterate back and forth to implement a Gibbs sampler in doing this. And if that makes sense, you can sort of see how we would build this over multiple strings, over multiple nodes, and et cetera. I think the pieces can certainly start to come together. As far as the updating is concerned, we could update a single node, the full conditional distribution the Gibbs sampler needs for a single node looks something like this. Usually single node updating is going to be very slow, single time point, single node updating. It'd be better to update the entire string using the multivariate normal distribution with this collection of constraints. So it's just a draw from multivariate distribution over a constrained region. How easy is that to do? Well, in this particular situation, suppression only, it's actually pretty simple because the suppression constraints can be written as this set of linear inequalities. And as a result of that, we have two ways to sample the constraint normal. We either transform to the space defined by the linear transformation here, or else we can transform to independent variables and then impose the corresponding linear constraints there. Either way is possible, and we've been playing with both of them. In a string of such missing observations, we do it string by string by string, and with multiple nodes, we do it node by node by node. Again, I could give more technical details, but if you have only failures, no suppression, then there are no constraints. In other words, you simply didn't see that observation, so it's not constrained. The only thing we know is it's part of a spatiotemporal process, and so that's what we'll know about it, but otherwise it is truly missing without any further information. With failure and suppression, now we can have a string of k unseen y's, and it's interesting then to try to figure out, well, all right, how many were suppressions, how many were failures? What we've been doing is introducing a counter, so we transmit a value and the transmission time associated with that. And what that does is it informs then about the number of suppressions, the number of failures in the string, but doesn't give us the explicit positions. How to handle the explicit positions? Well, one possibility is redundancy, essentially to go and transmit a little more. What we've been playing with is actually multiple imputation. We're sort of saying, well, I don't want to transmit. I'm going to rather offline play with multiple imputation ideas. And so what I'm going to do is just play with random specifications of the sequence of suppressions and failures given that I know how many of them were suppression and how many of them were failure. And we'll do, say, this several times, and we'll do some averaging to see how that affects the overall inference. If we look at failure, we have a different constraint set. Now we have to be somewhere in a set that looks like this. This is kind of a this or this constraint. It's a union constraint rather than an intersection constraint. And so here we don't have linear inequality constraints, and that earlier sampling approach won't actually work in terms of the multivariate normals. And the only thing we've played with so far is the unfortunately slow one-at-a-time updating. We're going to try to explore some more efficient ways to do this, but honestly, we haven't gotten that far with it yet. Of course, the right way to think about this is, as I said at the outset, is to embed this in a dynamic model, so therefore we have a measurement equation that looks like this, and then at the second stage, the transition equation looks something like this. Of course, the suppression is still on the y's, because that's the only thing we can see, again, we can sort of apply the same ideas that I was describing earlier in terms of implementation at the first stage, subject to the constraints. So again, it seems like a dynamic model can be accommodated. I'm just going to show you a few pictures, and I'm sure everybody is getting hungry for lunch, so we'll be finished fairly soon, maybe just a few more minutes. Look at an AR1 model. In the Fraunhofer situation, it's just going to have known drift, and the known drift for us corresponds to observed precipitation at some sort of global sensor. And in fact, we're going to assume that that precipitation is applicable to all the nodes, so the drift is going to be common for all the nodes. We're simplifying life in terms of ultimately only having an order regressive coefficient and a process variance. The suppression rates are going to be played with, but for any given experiment, they're known. The failure rate's not modeled. It doesn't have to be in this situation. And then we're just going to look at some experiments where we use the suppression failure information or ignore it, and we implement redundancy in some form or not. And those are the kinds of experiments we've played with, and I'm going to show you a couple of things. For example, here is, in the case of just a single missing value where we know both of the endpoints, but we put in no other information, you can sort of see how poorly, in some sense, we're able to pin down what we know about that missing value, even with the autoregressive structure. If you tell me that the missing value was a failure, then of course this middle part is removed, and you can see then what its distribution might tend to look like. These are just posterior draws, essentially, is what you're looking at. I could convert it to an actual density estimate if you wanted, but I think the picture is probably adequate. If the missing value was a suppression, again, you know a lot about it, and this shows you a bit about what the posterior looks like if it was a suppression. But of course, what we're really more interested in is strings, and so here, for example, is a string of five missing values with, again, the endpoints both known, but no other information on the missing values, and again, we're not able to pin things down terribly well, but for example, if all those missing values are known to be suppressions, then we actually are able to get much, much tighter posteriors. And again, none of this is surprising. It's just sort of an illustration of how we can actually do it, and the improvement that it provides. You might also look at it in terms of bivariate distribution, say for adjacent missing values. And so here is sort of the bivariate picture for the case of two adjacent missing values in the chain with no other information. You can see that the surface is fairly flat. It peaks at maybe at most 0.5, whereas if we include the suppression information, you can see how much more precisely we can pin down the bivariate distribution, how much higher the peak is in the joint distribution. So again, this does sort of clarify the value of capturing this information. So just two last slides, I think. As I said, we anticipate a high rate of suppression for the particular process that we're planning on studying, say something like soil moisture. This seems to be sort of obvious, although it's not particularly quantified, but if we're going to have huge rates of failure, then suppression seems to be a dangerous activity. Failure rate modeling is something that will obviously be needed to reflect space and time. We haven't really talked about lowering failure rate, which would involve redefining the topology maybe for the wireless sensor network, or I don't think we're going to change the landscape. We're not going to start cutting down trees in order to improve transmission rates. So as a result, no failure. We're not looking at it as an option. What we thought about a little bit, and again, I have some pictures, but I don't think I have time to show them, is in terms of information loss, how much are we actually losing as a result of the suppression and failure that's going on? And so the natural things to do are to study Kolbeck-Leibler distance between the full data posterior and the partial data posterior. Possibly even Kolbeck-Leibler distance across different levels of suppression. We could also do it in terms of purely inferential notions, like the length of fixed coverage intervals or the coverage probability of fixed length intervals, play with things like that. For the reconstruction of the sequences themselves, not the process parameters for the sequences, we have typically used predicted mean square error criteria. Again, lots of things are possible. Okay, well, let's see. You have to probably decide in terms of inference whether you're more concerned about the process parameters or whether you're more concerned about the sequence reconstruction. There's also probably some need to formulate a utility function that kind of reflects information loss relative to the cost of transmission. And although the cost is linear in the amount of transmission, it's not quite clear how to balance these. And we've played with sort of naive choices, but I think real choices in terms of battery life and things like that are, I guess, where we're going to be going in the future. And again, this point is obvious, and Jim made it as well. We're not thinking about there being any offline costs associated with computing. Once you take over from the gateway to the server can operate, That's not real time, and we're not worried about any of those computational costs. So this is the last slide. Okay, we have to introduce parameters changing over time. We want to get to node-to-node communication. Everybody understands that our transmission is much too simple. We're not including distance, and we're not including multi-hop issues. We will eventually get to multivariate data collection. We haven't introduced the possibility of this local calibration data, and that would lead to fusion models where we have local information from the calibration as well as the sensor information. We're going to, obviously, when we get to more complicated models, have to be somewhat approximate in terms of handling things. And I think where we're eventually moving, and it was mentioned earlier, the NEON network, the National Environmental Observational Network, is a substantial NSF project, and we're sort of envisioning ourselves as somewhat of a prototype for that. Okay, thanks.